South Africa's Abdullah Ibrahim with Chisa. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. It is Friday, May the 1st, 2015, and Baltimore State's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, announced earlier this morning that six police officers implicated in the April 12th arrest of Freddie Gray and his subsequent death a week later from catastrophic injuries have been charged and arrested and will go on trial on a range of criminal charges, including second-degree murder and manslaughter. The Fraternal Order of Police, the union representing the officers, has already indicated that it will seek to have an independent special prosecutor appointed in the case. They say that the officers were not responsible for Gray's injuries or death. But it is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories, and that means we gather here to engage in vigorous discussion and the exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. And we have had quite a number of news headlines, news issues, and stories to provoke us into discussion today, but the floor belongs to you. That's the way we work it here on Lead Stories. So 888-874-4888 is a number to call to get the conversation started. And of course, you know the rules. You can take us wherever you want us to go, but we're looking for your insights, your keen analysis. It is not important whether people agree or disagree. It is important that you posit your theory and your observations and analysis very, very well so that people can appreciate where you're coming from. And if you can do that, we're good to go. And of course, we always operate here on the basis of mutual respect and understanding for the extended Lead Stories family. 888-874-4888. Just one more thing before we get to the program. And again, I just want to say thank you so much to the audience for your uplifting messages and your support and your wonderful hugs via the email. Thank you so much. I'm trying to catch up, but please understand that to me, the very act of extending yourselves this way to me is comfort enough. I'm still at the hospital, and we're still going through with our program. From Charlotte, Elito, you're on the air.
Hello, Sister Utrice. How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm hanging in there.
Yes,
what are you bringing for us today?
Yes, well, I just want to say we're here with you. You're in our thoughts and our prayers. We give you all the blessings in the world. We hope you get through it. I gave you a little Facebook shout out, so hopefully, you know, we can guide you through these tough times while you recover.
Thank you so much.
And
any thoughts for us today?
Yes. I just wanted to say I told you about our poetry group that I joined not too long ago, Guerrilla Poets, and we're continuing the efforts that we set forth to partake in the community. We're starting a community garden in Charlotte, so we're excited about that. We also have been doing other projects with affiliate groups. One that I got mentioned is Granny's Boy. They do a lot of community work, and as well as Black Ink Monks is another poetry group here in Charlotte. So we're just out here doing the grassroots work so we can enlighten not only youth but adults as well, that not just Black Lives Matter, but all lives matter. I mean, the liberation of Black people is first and foremost and paramount, but we can't do it without, you know, our fellow brothers and sisters from other races. So we're just putting in the work in the community, and hopefully that work will come to fruition and we can change the system.
What is it about Charlotte that impelled you to do this?
I'm not certain. I'm originally from New York City, so I'm not sure. It's like, I don't know. It's a It's a smaller melting pot, so it's like, you know, you have a diversity of people here, but I'm not sure what it is about Charlotte. It's a small little city, but I see it has a lot of fight in it.
Mm-hmm. And you begun your community activism via poetry. That's great. That's admirable. Thanks, Alito, for your call today.
Thank you.
Thank you. From Dallas, it is the one, the only, the inevitable Sarah.
Greetings to you, Utrice, and greetings to the PRN audience.
Thank you.
Well, Utrice, I am not going to belabor this fact, because when I got the news, I was very, very sad to hear what happened to you, Utrice, because of all people to come to fall ill, I did not want it to happen to you. So I am all...
Thank you.
I'm very hopeful that you're going to get this stuff taken care of, because you said you're in good hands. You have Gary Noll and you have Dr. Arthur Lewis and the Big Apple and other people to prescribe you the proper medication. So we're going to get this thing on the handle. Utrice, what you needed to do, Utrice, is you need to get some bitters. Have you been taking your bitters like you used to be given when you was a child growing up, coming up?
Of course, of course.
Because when I heard you, I said, oh, Lord, I said, my parents was right. They used to make us drink that nasty stuff and cook all that bitter fruits and stuff and get us to eat it. And I guess it did work somewhat, but I'm digressing, Utrice. And, no, on a serious note, and you told me you're a very good spirit, Utrice. You have a lot of good people around you. And most times with diseases, it all has to do with your mindset, how you keep your mind in a positive frame. It has more so to do with your body and how your body would respond. And you are in a very positive mood. The people around you seem to be very positive. So you have it about 90% beat right there.
I think so. In fact, right here at the hospital, I'm something now of a growing legend, because everybody can believe how upbeat I am.
Yeah.
I said, well, this is my disposition. It's the way you're supposed to be, because it is part of your health. But thank you so much for all of your good thoughts and wishes. Now,
yes, ma'am.
Take
but
us into
I'm not...
your political mind. And tell us what it is you're thinking.
It's on my mind, but Utrice, I don't want to unburden myself too much with you to disturb your frame of reference, your positive frame of reference. But the situation in Baltimore that's going on, and as you were seeing that there, the indictment that came down, and I was telling a friend of mine a few minutes ago that I can see that the Miss Mosby, who I was the state attorney general or whatever it is in Maryland, that came out there and she started saying what these charges that these six officers involved with Mr. Graves' murder are going to be charged. So I am seeing that at least they're trying to get in front of it, just like with North Carolina have done in their situation, because this is a tinderbox that is about to explode. And if they would have done what New York did and Missouri did with Darren Wilson, they could have seen this could have spilled right over into Washington, D.C. And I have a firm belief that somebody from the White House, the Justice Department, as well as the Congress, they got up in there and they told me, you know what, y'all going to squash this, because we can't afford to have this stuff coming into Washington, D.C. with what's going to happen, because if they did not come down with an indictment, it would have spread into Washington. And that is why they have to try and get in front of it to kind of take some of the air out of it. And I'm glad that they've done it. But what I find very disingenuous, Utrice, and I've heard your analysis that you have done during the week with the different broadcasters, especially with CNN, which is, you know, I don't even watch them, and MSNBC's on the other side, is that they're trying to make this, you know, when they come and they talk with this riot, and this is what is irritating to me when they're always stressing that black people are rioting. This is a protest. It's a rebellion. It is not a riot. Nobody was killed. Nobody was murdered in these things. It was just property damage. And the way how they're making it seem, they're all focused on property damage and not so on the human damage that they've done to Mr. Gray, as well as the people within the Baltimore region and well throughout all of urban America, what they have done. They're not too concerned about that. And then when the president using such abrasive language, the mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, as well as a lot of commentators referring to people as thugs and whatever, they didn't refer to those student athletes as thugs in Kentucky when they went on that rampage after Kentucky lost in the Final Four. Ohio when the Ohio State won the National Football Championship, in Washington State when the Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl, throughout Boston and other parts of the country when the NHL, the National Hockey League, when they won or lost and people go in a rampage. It's predominantly European Americans who do these things. I don't hear anybody on TV calling and saying, okay, well, they're burning things, they're overturning cars, they're doing all of these things, you know, they're having a riot out here. No one ever says that. And it happens continuously whenever these, from college to professional sporting events, and it happens, and these people, that's how they express their frustration. And they're doing it just for entertainment. It's not as if though they have something pressing with them. This is how they do it, and it, a blind eye is turned on that. But now these people have valid, legitimate reasons, socioeconomic reasons as to what's going on there. Because recently I heard that the city of Baltimore sent out $250,000 shut-off notices to people, to residents. They're shutting off their water as they did in Detroit. These are valid reasons as to why people are in this mode that they are in. And for you to make it a stressing on property damage, more so on individuals, it shows once again where this country is at. And this president don't mind supporting terrorists and rebels in the Ukraine, in Syria, in Libya, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. He don't mind doing that. In Egypt, when they had all the Arab Spring, this was funded by the United States. They got in front of it, and they funded these people to go out here and rebel and to riot. It is always, you know, when they are doing it, it is okay for them to have that type of rebellion. But when people who are oppressed and taxing people in this country, who are treated as not citizens, who are treated as a non-entity, as you so eloquently stated, when we protest and we rebel, no, you need to try and do it in a peaceful way. Everybody else can have their violent uprising, but black people are always supposed to suck it up, grin and bear, and we're supposed to take all the punch. We're supposed to keep striving hard. We're supposed to keep struggling, because that's everything everyone keeps saying. Well, we got to keep struggling. It's all, that's what we're supposed to do. We're always supposed to struggle and not see any fruition for this struggle.
Well, you make a point. You echo some of the points made yesterday by Joel and by Jordan. And this is you adding to it today. So thank you so much for your call today, Sarah. Thank
you're
you
welcome,
so much.
You're welcome, Yatrice, and stay positive and stay well. I hope, you know, everything works out well, and I will send you some emails, Yatrice, and try and keep you upbeat so that, you know, you would stay in a positive frame of reference.
Thank you so much for that.
You're
from
so
Chicago,
welcome.
It's Henry.
Hey, Yatrice, how you doing?
I'm okay. I'm hanging in. How are you?
All right. Like I said before, me and I'm pretty sure everybody else still praying for you, and we're pulling for you to make it through this.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I wanted to talk about this this new news about the six officers that are being charged in this Baltimore case by Marilyn Mosley is the DA over there.
Mosley.
Yeah, mostly. Okay. It's interesting. I mean, it's something, you know, different from what we've seen before, where officers don't, you know, get charged. But, you know, I still have a reserve about this, because, you know, yes, they're being charged, but at the same time, you know, going through the justice system, we don't know what's going to happen. I would be shocked if all six are charged with, you know, the charges that the DA had announced. So, you know, let's wait for the court trial to see what happens, because there was a case out here in Chicago. I don't know if you you probably read about this one, Rekia Boyd, who was shot by an off-duty police officer back in 2012. For those who don't know the story, what happened was that Rekia Boyd is a 22-year-old African-American woman who was shot by an off-duty police officer named Dante Servin. Apparently, he was off-duty, but he was trying to shoot at another person, and apparently he ended up shooting Rekia in the head and, you know, basically just wounding the person that he was actually trying to shoot at. So in 2013, Rekia Boyd's family got a $4 million settlement from the city of Chicago. Then they decided to charge, Officer Servant with involuntary manslaughter. And just a couple of weeks ago, a Cook County judge found him not guilty of the charges. And there was outrage in regards to that because of the fact that, you know, we have another police officer getting off, killing another, you know, African-American, and this time a woman, off, you know, from a corrupt justice system or a broken justice system that, you know, just refuses to hold police accountable, especially in the case where he's recklessly using his gun because he felt that his life was in danger. And come to find out, the assailant, well, not the assailant, but the person that I guess he was shooting at didn't even have a weapon on him. So I guess the judge felt like, you know, his life was in danger, but his life was never in danger. So, you know, I look at this case, and I just can't help think about it when I think about, this latest news, because it's like, you know, I know everybody's happy that it's, you know, that they're being charged finally, but I'm still kind of reserved on it, you know, because we don't know. I mean, all of these officers can still get off. So I'm holding my judgment on this, even though, you know, it is something different, but, you know, I'm still kind of reserving judgment on this one.
Well, I think you take a very wise position, because we don't know what will come of this case. And it is a matter of waiting and seeing. I think that is a wise decision. Thanks, Henry.
Thank
you. Good to hear from Chicago today. Now we go to New York. We have Jay. You're on the air.
Yes. How are you, Eutrice? I hope you are feeling well.
I'm hanging in. So what are your thoughts today?
Hey, listen. Like, mostly all of these cases that the police are brought up on charges for killing African people, they get off. I'm at the point now to whereas I'm sick of hearing about Martin Luther King, I'm sick of hearing about Malcolm X, I'm sick of hearing about all of these leaders of the past. We need new leadership, and we need a new direction, and we need to do one thing, and I hope it starts now. We need to stop marching. We need to start boycotting. We need to find two businesses that we are the reason why they're successful in this country, and we need to break them. Because that's the only thing these people understand is economics. They don't understand protesting. They don't understand rioting. They don't understand nothing. They're putting a hurt on their pockets. See, once you put a hurt on their pockets, their whole attitude changes. That's why Gaddafi is not here no longer. You understand? That's why anybody who talks about doing something economically is marginalized and cut off at the knees. I'm sick of it. I'm not going to never, ever march again for no black life until we start talking about shutting it down and making these people do what they're supposed to do to us as a people. And the only way you will ever get them to do it is you got to break them financially. You got to make somebody the example. Because once you make someone or some corporation the example, then they're going to start talking to the other powers to be and saying, look, I lost my money. My money is gone. And that's all that matters in this country is the money. Nothing else in this country matters. So we need to stop, because I'll prove it to you. The only thing you ever hear Prime Daddy talks about is marching. You ever hear that call talk about boycotting a business? Because he can't. You know why he can't? Because those corporations pay for his affairs, give him donation, keep him out of jail for tax evasion and all the other nonsense that he's involved in. That's all this is about. It's about money. It's not about anything else. And I'm sick of us. I'm sick of us as a people going out there in the street getting tear gas and all of these things. For what? What are we getting?
These athletes talk to the young people and say, well, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Do they come into the neighborhood and use their wealth to build a community? Do they supply jobs or anything of that nature to make these young men have something for the future? Have they opened up a trade school? You telling me that 10 athletes couldn't come together and set up a nonprofit and donate $1 million and go out there and get some of our elders who are master plumbers, electricians, construction men, and start a school to give them a trade? Come on, man. Let's stop marching and talking about protests and all of this, and let's break somebody. Let's all break a corporation. Thank you, Patrice.
Thank you. You put your ideas out there. You put your ideas out there, Trey, and let's see how people react to them. Thank you so much for contributing. The number is 888-874-4888. This is Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. So feel free to call in and free your and perhaps our minds as well. 888-874-4888. Also from New York, Jordan, you're on the air.
How you doing? How's it going?
What's going?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I just want to give some people basic facts. on United States Code, I believe it's 42, or United States Code, which is Title 28, United States Code, United States has been listed as a corporation, and that's a fact. You don't have to be a crazy keyboard commando or a sovereign citizen or a Moor or be anti-American to state this or to recite this. It's not against the law. It's their legal codes and their legal, framework. It's under statutes at large, under congressional records. You can always find this. And I might as well get the cat out of the bag. And because we're in a crisis state, we're in a serious crisis. And that is, I would suggest people to reference, depending on who you prefer, three or four individuals. And you can, if you like, you can, your list audience can write these names down. They can Google their names. The first one is Constitution Man. His name is Carl Miller, C-A-R-L, Carl Miller. He is a former military person who was trained in constitutional law after his campaign in the Vietnam War. His name is Carl Miller. You can Google him. I would suggest go on YouTube and get his reference of Carl Miller. His nickname, a.k.a., is Constitution Man. This is where I get most of my reference points from. Then there's another person. His name is Taj Tariq Bey. Hold up a minute.
I think we lost Jordan. Yes, we did. All right, well, hopefully he can call back. We go to Baltimore. Assar, you're on the air.
Yeah, how are you doing today, Latrice?
Fine, thank you. What's going on in Baltimore? Give us a report.
Yeah, lots of report. I just wanted to say thank you, Mama, for doing what you're doing in the community and what legacy you've been leading, and also finishing one of the books of our elders, John Henry Clark. But
thank you.
In addition to that, I'm a farm visionary in Baltimore, and I run the program, the education program, at a farm called the Fannie Lou Hamer Sundiata Coley Farm, and it's in West Baltimore. Pretty much ground zero of the so-called fiasco. And I just wanted to say that there's a lot of children there that I deal with, and we've been building wonderful things. It's our first season farming, and we've been growing a diverse amount of different vegetables and planting fruit trees and getting education on composting and science and learning soil ecology and just how everything ties into life. And just wanted to put that out there that a lot of our children are doing a lot of positive things, and there are people on the ground that are working with children, and we're building and we're teaching them life skills, and they're applying it firsthand.
That's great. What do you make of the climate, the recent climate in Baltimore?
I think right now the recent climate for those who are kind of responding emotionally to the activities that's been going on, they kind of look at this as a win, as far as the six officers being charged. And, for the most part, it's a lack of understanding of the whole justice system and how this system at all works and functions. So, the city's kind of torn between celebration and really where to go from here. You know, there's a lot of grassroots organizations that are trying to mobilize people to organize around key issues, around issues that are productive and proactive instead of being reactive.
Well, living in Baltimore, do you see any connection between, say, Baltimore and Detroit, or Baltimore and Chicago, or Philadelphia, or Washington, D.C.? Do you see anything that looks like a trend occurring in Baltimore that has already occurred in other cities with predominantly African-American populations?
Oh, yes. Just before this happened, we had a lot of people's water getting turned off in the city. And you covered that. You covered some of that on your programs. And that was something similar that happened in Detroit. Across all cities in America, we have a loss of jobs. And in Baltimore, there were a lot of jobs that were through manufacturing and building. And those jobs are gone, and they're not coming back. We also have a lot of gentrification or a flight back into the city and people being displaced to other parts. So we have those sorts of things going on too, which is something, a narrative that you see all over the country and in those different cities. And most people are pretty much caught up in the rat race of survival, whereas though it's hard for them to be able to see these things and be able to work proactively to against them or to improve their quality of life before these things really come down the pipeline. But also what I see is that there's a swell of young people who are getting engaged, who are networking, who are communicating, who are educating themselves on what's going on, and they're looking for guidance and leadership, and there is leadership and guidance in Baltimore. We just all have to come together on common causes and common ideologies or common goals, that is, and do things proactively.
Right. Well, yes, and that was the point that we made when we were doing all those reports from Detroit. I did say Detroit is a template for what is to come in many, many cities across the country. And Baltimore, yeah. In fact, we discussed Baltimore in that regard as well, that Baltimore, having been brought to its lowest point some years ago, it was the plan to empty Baltimore because now it is desirable, except not for the people living there. Just like Detroit, you empty the city and bring in the desirable populations. It's happened already in Washington, D.C. It's happening in New York City at a great pace. So in many, many ways, what was going on in Detroit is what is in store and what has been meant to be for Baltimore. Thank you so much, Asar, for your call today, and good luck with your continued work. Jordan is back. So, Jordan, you can finish up. We got disconnected for some reason.
Yeah, I got disconnected because I was actually purchasing a handset from the phone so I can just be free and use. But I have to apologize. I don't have the actual statutes at large or congressional records that will authenticate and validate that the United States is a corporation. And if we take that as a premise, and your other callers have also referenced this, it is a corporation. So we're dealing with subdivisions and municipalities and court systems and a law, or I would say a law enforcement system based on property and equity. So we're not important as human beings. We're listed as citizens. And I've explained this ad nauseum, that as a citizen, you're subject to the rules of the corporation of the United States operating as United States of America. That means you're subject to the codes, ordinances, and statutes. And that's how we become victimized. We must take ourselves out of the corporate status. We must take ourselves out of the American citizen status. And that's not it's not difficult to do, but there's procedures to do that and still be able to contract and have activities and a quality of life, as if you can bear with me and say, if you can bear with me, my thoughts.
Jordan, how does one remove oneself from this construct that you're discussing? How do people uncitizen themselves?
You uncitizen yourself by doing a declaration of status as you are a flesh and blood human being, and that you are a person of the land, that you are indigenous to this land, depending on your nationality. Now, a declaration of status can easily be drawn up depending on what ethnic background you are, because we all are human beings, and we're not people. We're not persons. We are people, and we have to get out of the misclassifications that the census takers and the Social Security Department classifies us as being Negro, black, or color, or Hispanic. And by filing with the Secretary of State or your United States Attorney General's office or your respected governor of each state a declaration of status, you declare on the record that you are a flesh and blood human of and there are different websites and different places where you can get this information for free without paying some hustler to gouge you again, because we don't want to be victimized again.
Have you done this process? Have you gone through
it? Yes, I have. There are several people who have, there's hundreds of people who have done this process. They are across the economic and cultural divide. There are Caucasians, people of European descent, people of Moorish African American descent, people who are Hispanics. I just finished working with a friend in the Bronx of New York who filed his declaration of status on the record to United States Department of Justice. You file these are courtesy notices, by the way. And by the way, you're not giving them permission. You're not asking for permission or approval. You're giving them notice. Because
so when you when you file this declaration status, what actually is the status? Are you any longer a U.S. citizen, or what are you? Do you hold a passport?
That's a very good question. I have an answer for that. There's things called the international passport. You can actually go to let's see what the best websites to go to. You can go to the listening audience can go to either the Moorish Science Temple.org. They can go to if there are Moors, meaning that they are African descent. They can go to R as in Run, V as in Victor, publication, RV Bay publication. I'm trying to say it slowly so your listening audience can write this down. R as in Run, V as in Victor, Bay, B-E-Y, which is the Muslim term for someone of a certain status, RV Bay publication. And you can get this information right off the top. And
I'll tell you, I will have to do some more reading research into this matter declaration status.
Well, it was interesting.
I'm sure that it is a complex issue.
It is a complex issue because the matrix that pushes us, and forces us into be citizens subject to statutes and codes and ordinances and police brutality and to be taxation is so complex that the remedy to get you out of the system is further complex. There's also an issue of, some have debated this as being valid or not, of seeking an apostille. An apostille is something you get from the governor of your respected state, and you write a letter of your declaration of status, and you proceed to the governor's office that you want an apostille that authenticates, validates your declaration of status. And you still can operate with the driver's license to do business. But this all goes back to the 1933, or I can't remember the actual date, 1933 or 1930, that period of the birth certificate securitization scheme. And the birth certificate securitization scheme during the Great Depression was the great deception placed on American people who did not consent, and their descendants, my generation, your generation, did not consent to being part of this scheme where you were blindly, the mother, had to, at birth of their child in a hospital, fill out these forms to be part of the birth certificate program. And once that's done, they use that to securitize your name, the all capital name. Now, you don't, once again, you don't have to be some crazy fanatic to understand this.
It's a long thing here, Jordan.
Yeah, I know it's long. It's very complicated. But it should not be dismissed.
No, but you have given us a good head start for people who have heard what you have had to say today, if they desire to do some further research on this and further reading on it. So thank you for getting that process started by contributing today. Thank you. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's hear what you're thinking. Are we getting quite a few reactions to this announcement today of the arrest of these six officers and the pending charges against them, including in the case of the driver of the vehicle that Freddie Gray was thrown into, standing trial or soon to be standing trial for second degree murder. So, but we also are getting a sense here that people are saying, I'm not sure that this is going to work, but I'm holding my prejudices in abeyance and waiting to see what the process yields. And that pretty much is where a lot of people are. They've gone down this road only a few times when the system has said, well, we will charge the officers. But then, of course, we see, as in the case of in Ferguson, and we see in the case of New York City's the case involving Eric Garner, how they turn out. So justice is not an abundant thing for African Americans looking for it. 888-874-4888. Who else is on the air? Let's hear what you have to say. You can take the conversation wherever you wish to take it. I'm just asking a little bit concise, but you have free rein to express yourselves and to engage in vigorous discussion here on the program. This is very important, by the way. It is a vital part of what I think radio ought to be used for and used as, which is to bring people together, stitched together by ideas and information. And again, it isn't important whether you agree or disagree. It is important that you hear another point of view. It may cause you to actually review your position on things, or it may cause you to learn something new. And I just love that about radio. I like the idea that we are also engaged in peer education, that is, person-to-person education. I learn a lot from listening to the callers. Many of them have accumulated decades of experience and expertise in particular fields, and it pays to really listen, to kind of suspend your own positions for a minute and listen to what other people have to say. Willie from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I hope you get well soon, honey. We love
you
dearly. Listen, as far as this thing in Baltimore, you know, all we wanted to do was cease. We all across the country, we have bodies. So that there's a crime committed. Just charge him. We know what's going to happen when you get into court. We already know that. Because if you think it's going to be any different than New York, you're the problem. You're out of your mind. You see what I'm saying? This is the historical reality of the United States. We now have cameras. That's the only reason why there's even an issue. It's even an issue. You see, you follow what I'm saying? Now, if you go back and look at the book Without Sanctuary, you see just look at the book. You'll see this is what this is, this nation is. Our lives meet court in Dred C. Scott's decision. Your life means nothing here. But I'm satisfied with the charges because I know what's going to happen. But you're showing some kind of reverence and respect for the, you know, for black lives, you see. Once you go to court, you can't just kill us. We go into the cemeteries and nothing happens. That's state-sponsored terrorism under international law because it's sanctioned by the state just killing black men and women all across America. And we know this has been going on. Now, the way I look at it from my vantage point, I would advise young people to join the Nation of Islam. Simple as that. Because, and why? Not, whether you're a member or not, it doesn't matter. Or your faith is Islam, it doesn't matter. Just be a part of that group. Why? They're taught to respect these people. Because we know who they are. You see, many of us are running, it's not my brother, my sister, all kind of crazy stuff. They're not your brother or your sister. Your brother or your sister would not do these things to you. You see what I'm saying? Now, the brothers and sisters in the Nation of Islam, they try. You could have drugs on every block. It'll stay there, as though it doesn't exist. Because that's why they're trying to get you away from the things that make you have contact with these people. You see what I'm saying? You wouldn't be selling cigarettes in the street. They're trying to get cigarettes out of your mouth. They're trying to get drugs out of your mouth. They're trying to get you to respect your woman, respect the law, and carry yourself respectfully. In New York, a couple of years ago, remember Giuliani wanted to make a lie out of the minister. And he sent the police up there. He was pandering to a certain group in America because he had his presidential ambitions. So they ran up in there to make a lie out of the minister. Because they said, we don't carry guns. But if you come to us with guns, we'll take your guns and kick your whatever. Those are his exact words. And that's what happened. That's what the police did. When they ran up in there, you know the story. We all in New York know the story. The police, they respect these things are not happening to the brothers and sisters within the nation. Just because the way they carry themselves. They're taught to respect them. And the police, by what happened in New York, knows that if you run upon them like that, there's going to be some serious problems. So from my vantage point, I think, you remember a couple of years ago you told us a story about a sister that you went to college with, and she dressed up as a
woman.
Could you tell that story again? Because
we found ourselves, we had to take a course in order to keep our credits. We wanted to be full-time, and one of the courses was at night. And, during the course of the day in college, where you all, you know, you dress like college students, you have your jeans and whatnot. But since we would leave college, we would leave the classroom together, she would duck in, we'd both duck in to the ladies' room before we hit the train. And the first time this happened, it stunned me. She went in with her jeans and, you know, a regular dress, and came out fully garbed as a Muslim woman. So I said, "Oh, I didn't know you're Muslim. Are you going to prayer?" She says, "No, I just dress this way when I'm going home late." And I said, "Well, why?" She says, "Because nobody would dare to do me anything. Everybody would leave me alone. Dressed like this, I could walk in the most dangerous part of the community, and nobody would do me a thing." She said, "I am safe, and I am confident, and I could walk in the worst parts of the neighborhood at any time dressed like this, absolutely safe and secure."
Exactly.
And that was her method of traveling late at night. Because I said, "Really?" She says, "Yes, because it is well known if you do anything, you will be found. They will come for you. And you will have to explain why it is you felt the need to trouble or in some way, you know, annoy or rob or do something vile to a Muslim woman." So that was very instructive to me. Thanks, Willie, for your call today.
Okay, my sister.
Thank you. From New York, also, Midnight, you're on the air.
Beatrice.
Yes, you're on the
How
air.
How you feeling?
I'm hanging in.
I know you are. I know you are. I wanted to veer off a little. And you had a few programs on concerning, I think, the future. I think what was the timeline? 2036 or something, where we were black people or people of color would be the majority.
Yes, 2035. It's 2035. Predicted, but it may happen sooner.
It may happen sooner. That's right. I see everything that's happening right now as the prelude to that. The killings of black folk, people of color, being a prelude to the control that basically the minority would have. My belief is that as the non-whites become the minority, they will impose stricter laws to protect themselves. And that's what I see. That's what I see in terms of the shooting, just the abuses that black folks are receiving right now. That's that.
Well, why then do you not also see, or I should ask it in the form of a question this way.
Okay.
Are you also seeing consciousness, and as much as you have come to that conclusion, have you seen beyond yourself a consciousness that this is happening?
Well, I mean, just look around you. I mean, you know, how many black young men have been shot in the past 5 months? I've been aware of it for a while. You know, I've been aware that the majority, quote-unquote, will be the minority pretty soon. I see also the machinations of peoples being primed to be the next majority, you know, to take over the control, you know, because of certain things, because of color, or because they're not as dark as some people are, things like that. Very dangerous things. Very dangerous games that the people in charge are playing with. My consciousness is there for a long time.
What, therefore, do you think is an appropriate response?
Huh, that's simple. That's very simple. What I think people have to do is, if you're going to protest, then have a demand. That's what we're not doing. We're protesting, but we're not demanding. If we protest and you want to do something to a store, demand that they hire people. Demand that they hire the whole community. Protest is vapid without a demand. The second thing, in terms of the police, that two-day law that they don't have to speak to anyone for 2 days, that has to be scrapped. Mm. They are citizens. You know, policeman is not something different than a citizen. And that has to be scrapped. We have to have some kind of handle on the police. You know, but there are many other things. But I don't want to run up the clock. But those are my contributions.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your very valuable contribution, Midnight. Thanks for calling in today. That brings us to the end of our program of our Free Your Mind Friday here on Lead Stories. And I want again to thank you for being so free, being so confident that you can share your thoughts in this forum of ideas, information, experiences, for people to just consider. And again, I say it is really not important whether people agree or disagree. It is important only that you can put together your argument in a cogent way so people can appreciate the points that you want to make and then will consider them. So I feel so good about a program that will embrace all your thoughts, wherever you happen to be on the spectrum, and because you offer them so freely and sincerely and with great respect. Thank you so much for that. You do us all a great justice when you do that. Have yourselves a good and restful weekend. I'm going to do that. I will certainly keep you apprised of what's going on in my life. But I aim to have a good, enjoyable weekend. Take it easy, because stress is important to not invite into your system. You should always disinvite stress. And then we come back to each other on Monday with some really scintillating programming. Thank you so much. A pleasure as always, and a great, great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.